You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. Let's thank our sponsors. Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland. If you love beautiful Swiss cheese, look for Emmy's premier cult Bach label and cheeses such as Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux, aged in the 22-million-year-old Kaltbach cave for superior flavor, unlike anywhere else in the world. Bob's Red Mill. Bob's Red Mill is an employee-owned company that has been offering organic, gluten-free, and stone-ground products for decades. With Bob's Red Mill, you're not just getting quality, you're getting flavor-packed food that tastes amazing. Visit bobsredmill.com today. If you're daydreaming about culinary school, maybe it's time to say bonjour to Le Cordon Bleu. Learn more about the legendary culinary school's most prestigious professional qualification, Le Grand Diplome, by visiting cordonbleu.edu. All right, a few housekeeping things. Don't forget, our Jubilee NYC tickets are on sale right now. Jubilee is taking place this year on Saturday, April 14th, and it's our biggest Jubilee yet. We have so many amazing speakers joining us, including, are you ready? Ruth Reichel, Chef Ruth Rogers, Chef Mashama Bailey, authors Stephanie Dandler, Jen Ag, and Samin Nosrat, and the incomparable Nigella Lawson. Every time I say Nigella's name, I want to pinch myself. But it's true, she's really coming to Jubilee. Visit cherrybomb.com for tickets. I would love to see all of you there. Now, we have a very special guest in the studio right now who is sitting across from me, my niece, Charlotte. Charlotte, can you say hi to everybody?
Hi.
What's your name?
Charlotte.
And how old are you, Charlotte?
5 3/4.
5 3/4? That means you're going to be 6 pretty soon, right?
Yeah.
Very exciting. You always have a great birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
With an excellent cake.
Yes.
I think last year there was a cotton candy machine, perhaps?
Yeah.
And Cinderella?
Yeah.
Making cotton candy?
Yeah.
I didn't know princesses had to work that hard.
Cinderella does.
So she, that's true. That's true. That's how she got her start, right?
Yeah.
Sweeping the floors and doing all those chores. So, Charlotte, we are going to do a speed round, and we are going to ask you a few questions about food. Are you ready? Are you sure? Okay. What's your favorite food?
Chocolate croissants.
Chocolate croissants. Mmm. What's your favorite fruit?
Mango.
Favorite vegetable?
Broccoli.
What is your favorite thing to bake?
Chocolate cake.
And who do you bake with?
My mom.
And why do you bake chocolate cakes?
I just like to.
What do you eat at school?
Bananas.
Bananas? That's what's your school lunch every day?
Not always, it's the same.
It's not always the same? It's different things? All right. Do you have a favorite restaurant?
The Diner.
The Diner? The diner near your house?
Yeah.
What's it called?
The Mansion.
The Mansion. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do we know if the Mansion has a female chef?
I don't know what
that
is.
We're going to have to find out. So let's talk about today's guest. Natasha Pickowitz represents the new breed of pastry chef. They're busy, curious, creative, and political. Natasha oversees the teams at not one, but two acclaimed restaurants in Manhattan, Flora Bar at the Met Brouwer Museum and Cafe Altro Paradiso, where she turns out beautiful desserts and baked goods, from her gray salt sticky buns to her bombolini alla crema. She contributes her work to cool happenings around town, like the Wifey Cafe Gallery pop-up in Brooklyn last fall, and she helps organize important food moments, like last year's All-Star Bake Sale that benefited Planned Parenthood. The sale is back this year and will take place Sunday, April 8th at Cafe Altro Paradiso and features yet another amazing roster of talent, including Erin McKenna's Bakery, King, La New Yorkina, Mazidar, Poppies, Ovenly, Otway, and The Smile, all of our favorites. If you're going to the sale, go early. I recorded this interview with Natasha earlier this month, and I hope you enjoy our chat.
My name's Charlotte.
Now you're talking. Natasha Pickowitz, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you very much.
I'm so thrilled to have you here.
Happy to be here.
And let's just jump into the reason you're here for a lot of reasons because I'm a big fan and I'm super excited to talk to you and get to know you a little bit better. But primarily, you are here to talk about this awesome bake sale that you are doing for the second year in a row.
Yes.
So I'm handing it over to you. Tell us all about it.
So excited to make this an annual tradition. The last year when we did it for the first time, Altro hadn't been open a year yet. And where it all kind of came from was in the wake of the presidential election in November 2016, I think everybody that I work with was pretty distraught. And I think we were all trying to come together and think of ways that we could do something meaningful. And I thought about it a lot over the holidays. And, of course, I'm working within my own wheelhouse and trying to combine sort of my role in restaurants and with pastry and also my own personal identity and my relationship with Planned Parenthood and, you know, all of the struggles that they've come up against dealing with their funding and their role in the country and in New York, too. So, you know, I think I wanted it to feel really kind of grassrootsy and DIY, which is something you don't always see in kind of fancier restaurants. So I was like, let's just do a bake sale and have it really feel like that and not have it be anything, you know, too overwrought or too kind of fussy, but truly have it be people that I know in the community, sort of peers and friends and colleagues and people I'd like to get to know and people that I do know, and have it really feel like this expression of what we do and have it all go into Planned Parenthood. And, you know, it was such a tremendous success that we have decided it needs to be an annual tradition, wanted to reprise it again this spring and, you know, learn from so many kind of mistakes and things we couldn't have anticipated last spring.
Mistakes. I doubt there were any serious mistakes, but we're talking elevated bake sale here, not like Duncan Hines yellow cake mix that's
fair.
You know, you make the morning of and slather some canned frosting on.
Yeah, I wanted to give, you know, chefs and bakers and friends a chance to create something that would fit under this sort of bake sale theme. So a lot of people had a lot of fun with that and kind of made these little bespoke treats that worked within the aesthetic of the bake sale. It was really incredible.
I love the term bespoke treats. This isn't a bake sale, people. This is a bespoke treat sale. So can you give us a sneak peek? Can you tell us who's going to be there?
Absolutely. So I wanted to grandfather in everybody that did it the year before because it really all felt like this experience.
Grandmother in. I had to do that. I'm sorry.
Very good. But, you know, obviously we're going to be doing treats from Cafe Altro and Flora Bar. But then all of our friends are kind of coming back. So we have the women from Ovenly. We have Miro from Gramercy Tavern. My friend Anna Ortiz with Day and Tonight. Erin McKenna from her bakery. Justine McNeil, who's no longer at Del Posto, is opening a restaurant with her husband in Philly. So that's TBD, but they're going to do some kind of beautiful treat anyway. Nick Morgenstern, they're going to come back. We have plenty of, Superiority Burger. The list is so amazing.
How do you squeeze them all
in
that space?
We had to be very strategic. Luckily, Altro is pretty big. Luckily, we had quite a lot of frozen treats last year and tons of outdoor space. So we kind of plotted all of the frozen treats, like La New Yorkina did their paellas outside. They were scooping Morgenstern's outside. Superiority Burger, we had gelato. So we're going to try to get as much of that out there, especially if the weather's nice. And that Soho Square in front
of the
restaurant.
Let's all take a moment and send a little prayer out to the universe that the sun shines.
I know. April 8th. Please, 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 please.
So what should people's strategy be for coming to the Bake for Good sale? Are you calling it Bake for Good again?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think definitely.
So what should people's strategy be? Should they line up early? Should they come later in the day? Should they just hang out all day?
Well, if I learned anything from observing the chaos from last year, it was that to come early, you're definitely going to have the best kind of choice of all the treats. But we had a huge lineup before we even opened at 11 a.m., and then it was like floodgates. Because I think it's a great opportunity also to taste these beautiful things from chefs. Like, you know, we have some new people coming this year, the chefs from King, Jess and Claire are going to be there. Claire from Otway is coming. You know, I think it's such a unique way to sort of also experience what those restaurants are all about and those bakeries do. But, you know, in these kind of little $5 donations and these little treats. So, yeah, I think the earlier the better, to be honest. But, you know, what we really want to do this year is kind of keep the party moving forward into the afternoon. So we have Atla is coming to bartend, and they're going to make some drinks with Yola Mezcal, this sort of female-made, like, mezcal producer that's super delicious. So we're going to have, like, some drinks, and then, you know, ice cream is maybe more of an afternoon treat. But, you know, we want people to feel like they can come and hang out and enjoy the space and also interact with the, you know, representatives we have from Planned Parenthood that are coming, that are going to be answering questions. And also, it was really important to me that we collaborate with a nonprofit that was really based locally. So while Planned Parenthood obviously has so much impact nationwide, we're specifically working with PPNYC. So, you know, I want people to feel that all of their donations that they're doing are going back into programs that are benefiting the city and the communities around them. So we're going to have some people there kind of, you know, having fun too. And Nancy Wang is going to be DJing. So it's just going to be like, you know, we're obviously not having brunch that day. So, you know, we're really just going to make the most out of it. You know, if last year when we ran out of pastries, we kind of switched to wine and oysters, and that seemed pretty fitting. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's so incredible that you and all the chefs and pastry chefs and bakers and all the people you mentioned give their time for this cause.
Yeah. You know, when I reached out initially, you know, I obviously was prioritizing people that I know and sort of had relationships with already. But, you know, I couldn't be sure that, you know, some of these people were going to be able to participate or that they would know who I was or know about the restaurant or want to volunteer their time or donate, you know, their work. But I was really moved by, you know, how consistently people were sort of enthusiastically responding to my proposition. I mean, almost everybody actually said yes, except for like the couple of people, like Karen Damasco, when she, you know, at Hearth was unfortunately out of town this last year, but she's going to be here this year, you know, this kind of thing. So it's like people want to be here. You know, it's overwhelming, that feeling of how generous people are being with this idea and how positive and, you know, their attitudes are about it. It's like, I feel really grateful, you know.
You and I were talking earlier about putting together the Jubilee content. So many things go into it, and it's like a jigsaw puzzle. And I'm sure it's the same as you, like trying to decide who participates in this. But I, along with it, I've been giving a lot of thought to, like, what makes a modern chef right now, and or pastry chef or baker or whatever. And I really think it's the kind of person like you. That was why I was really keen to have you on the show also. You really represent what is modern about the food scene right now, you know, and it's not just waking up early and going into the kitchen and making beautiful baked goods and all the incredible stuff that you make. It's just feeling this need to do more, to give back.
Absolutely. And, you know, working with Ignacio and Thomas.
And say, tell us who those guys are.
Ignacio Matos, my chef, and his partner, Thomas Carter, you know, I feel really lucky that they have been so generous with giving me a platform to explore all of these interests that I have. And I really feel like it's just so imperative that our work isn't sequestered within our kitchen in some basement, but that, you know, we're reaching out to people in our neighborhood and people in our communities and making relationships there and doing things beyond, you know, especially like, you know, where we work, those restaurants, they're nice places, but not everyone necessarily can, you know, enjoy what that experience may be. And, you know, like Uptown at Flora, like we developed an amazing relationship with the Lenox Hill Neighborhood House, which is one of Manhattan's oldest tenement houses. And they serve basically that whole east side of Manhattan. And what they do is so tremendous and so important. And I wanted us to be on the Upper East Side, but not sort of removed from all that, but to get to know what these sort of historic community-focused centers are doing and not just be like in the Met Broyer, but, you know, really kind of see what else is going on in this neighborhood, which to a lot of people, maybe some people have a certain idea of what it is like. So, you know, I'm really fortunate that Ignacio and Thomas have been really supportive of that. And, you know, on the other side of it, also making sure that the teams that we're bringing in, like our pastry cooks and line cooks and all of those, you know, other chefs that I work with, that we share those values and that we understand how important it is to prioritize, you know, those kind of efforts, you know. So
how many people do you oversee now?
Well, between the two restaurants, you know, I have a team of about six pastry cooks. The team at Flora is larger because we also have Flora Coffee. So we're not just making restaurant pastries and desserts for the restaurant, but also this super bustling coffee bar that is open when the museum is open. So we're sort of open all day. And that's, you know, we're not a production facility. We're not a bakery. We don't have giant deck ovens or space to store things. So we have to be super smart and efficient about how we kind of tackle projects and put things out there so that they're perfect and delicious, but also make sense for our team, you know, to be making them.
Where do you start your day? Which location?
It always depends. It's definitely variable, but I like to start my day at Altro, and then I like to finish at Flora.
And I think Altro's down in Soho.
Right. So if anybody's ever been in the kitchen at Cafe Altro, it's pretty compact, and I have to be very strategic about when I like to be there so I can make the best use of my time. So I'm always doing a combination of just sort of normal day-to-day production, physical work, tasks, just getting the restaurant ready for service. And then also collaborating with the chefs and Ignacio, testing new things, trying out new products, working on new desserts. And then, you know, we always have this myriad of offsite things and pop-ups and parties and special events and one-offs. So between all that, I like to sort of start at Altro and then I'll take the train up this, we'll take the C. I like going up the West Side and then walking over Central Park over to 75th and Madison, which is where Flora is, because I like to think that that little walk is sort of what helps me transition between the two spaces. So I will start to sort of move into a new headspace at that point. That being said, I mean, it's a constant challenge. I always feel like I wish I could be in more than one place more. Ignacio and I commiserate about that constantly. Obviously, he's also at Estella all the time, too, and writing a cookbook and, you know, doing all of his things. But, you know, I try to be as Libra-like in my, like, balance between the two places as possible.
So I feel this. I read that you really like to walk. I read about your morning walk.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way. Like, I
love it.
I would like to meditate. I just, finding time to do anything these days is such a struggle. But I really do look at my walking time as sort of my meditation, head-clearing time.
So important. I absolutely love it. I mean, I'm from San Diego. It's a total car culture. People commute. For me, walking, moving around, being on the train, it's like people say that you can be creative when you're in the shower because you're kind of focused on a banal task and you're not distracted. I feel that way about walking. So I'm often like working out things in my head or planning out my day or, you know, considering things.
And tell me about working in a museum.
It's, I mean, the opportunity to be in the Met Broyer is just, it's so remarkable, and we're so lucky, and I think about it all the time. You know, I think, and the relationship between the museum and Flora is very real. Like, often, you know, the kind of crowds that we'll get are super influenced by what kind of shows are in the museum. Like, when things are really popular, like the Carrie James Marshall show, like, the, you know, we feel it in the restaurant. And I think that that kind of dynamic between the contemporary art world and what we're doing in the restaurant is really meaningful, and it's something that we think about all the time. I feel so lucky that we are able to do our work in such a unique space. I mean, the building itself is, you know, a landmark of the Upper East Side. And, you know, we kind of have built our identity around, you know, while paying respect to what all, you know, what all of that architecture means. So, you know, I think that that's something that I definitely keep in mind when we're designing pastries and desserts, that it sort of has this visual kind of contemporary aspect to it that I think relates also to what the museum is about too.
So let's talk about your works of art, your baked goods, because that's what everybody wants to hear about. What are you known for these days?
Well, I think I've been getting a lot of positive feedback about all of the layer cakes that I've been working on over the last year, and which is fun, which is nice to hear, because something that we do within our pastry team at Flora is we also make pastry resolutions at the start of the year. So, you know.
I never heard of pastry resolutions. It's a first.
Then we like kind of check up on each other every few months and see, like, you know, I'll have cooks who are like, oh, and you hear about things that they're interested in that you wouldn't know otherwise. Like, oh, I'm really interested in learning how to make cheese and how to, you know, get into sourdough bread making, or, you know.
All right, I'm writing this down because I'm going to put on my calendar December 31st, whatever show we have before that, we're going to talk about our pastry resolutions.
Yeah,
might call you on air.
Please. I want to be held accountable. And sometimes resolution making, it gets so broad. You're sort of like, well, I have to completely change who I am to, like, you know, adhere to this resolution I made. So we try to keep it, like, you know, meaningful and, like, doable.
And
so
what was yours?
Last year, mine was layer cakes. And I just, you know, the engineering of them, you know, how they eat. I'm so picky. I'm not really actually that big of a cake person. They can get kind of saccharine. They cloying. The flavors can be a little predictable. The appearance can sometimes, people get so stuck in what they think a cake should look like. They're not that beautiful to me. Like, they sort of seem more predictable. So I wanted to figure out how to approach a traditional, you know, aspect of the pastry industry, like making cakes, with, you know, what Ignacio and I try to do in the restaurants. And that all really came to fruition when we collaborated with Simone Chubuck for her wifey pop-up over the summer last year.
And that was in Brooklyn. You might have read about it in Cherry Bomb.
Yeah, right. That piece was so amazing. But being able to collaborate with her as a visual artist, and that really opened up my eyes to sort of letting cakes appear maybe some and things that you wouldn't expect, you know. And I think that combined with Ignacio's kind of very honed palette and very sophisticated sensibilities with flavor and how things should eat and feel, we are able to make something that I, you know, hopefully that people responded really well to and I love making.
So wifey, just to give everybody some context, so wifey was really sort of like a more of an art project even than a food project, although
yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Or just an interesting, like, kind of dovetailing of the two disciplines and seeing how that they did relate to each other, which was very much true.
Or maybe it was an art project that became a food project.
I would drop off layer cakes, and then she would send me a photo of a cake that she had, like, completely covered with some flower arrangement. Like, she would be like, what do you think? And I'm like, it looks amazing. Like, go for it. You know, it's like this conversation that we're having and feeding off of each other's ideas and creativity.
So walk us through an actual cake that you've made. The flavors,
well, we
the
did
layers.
We did this cake at Flora Bar for New Year's Eve that people loved and I want to return to. Often these kind of holidays are where we do special tasting menus are a great way for us to experiment and play around with new dish ideas and then take the time after to really like dial them in. So that cake, it was this really delicate millet sponge. So millet has this very distinct kind of earthy flavor and is also gluten-free. But I love a classic Genoise sponge for layer cakes, which is really, they're kind of egg-based. So you're separating yolks and the whites and creating tons of volume by incorporating air into them. So you fold the aspects together and you get this very delicate, fine-crumbed, gluten-free sponge that can take to any kind of soak. And for me, that's the most important sort of aspect of a great cake, is that you sort of get this smooth mouthfeel that isn't dry or crumbly, but is sort of comes together in your mouth in this way that is pleasant to eat. So you're not getting like a big bite of cake and then like a little bit of something in the middle.
Explain the soak. You tuck that in there. Not every home baker knows what the soak is.
Oh yeah, this will take your layer cakes to the next level, is if you kind of hydrate any kind of cake layer with some kind of liquid. So when I was making the tiramisu at Cafe Altro, we were soaking the sponge with like brutal parlor espresso and Marsala wine. And it gives it a moistness, but also is a way to add another kind of flavor to something. So I don't like the soaks to have sugar in them because the cake usually will already have some in it. So Ignacio loves boozy desserts. So we've played around with like tequila, with rum, Marsala. This New Year's Eve cake had a Riesling soak that was really lovely and kind of ethereal. And then I layered that with like a Meyer lemon marmalade and then made a mousse with jasmine tea and like beautiful heavy cream. And then also, the thickness of the layers is super important. So I like kind of even layers of cream and cake. That's how our tiramisu was. And then you take a bite and it sort of evenly distributes in your mouth and feels really yummy. So that's kind of my approach to making cakes. And within all that, the components can certainly change.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Natasha will explain how home bakers can soak their cake layers and tell us more about her fascinating career. Stay tuned. It's time for a quick cheese lesson from our friends at Emmy, the makers of traditional, authentic, delicious cheeses from Switzerland. Le Cremeux is a new, luxurious cheese from the Kaltbach Cave. Sweet and unassuming at first, this semi-firm cheese keeps you coming back as its flavors and texture develop. Emmy's Kaltbach Le Cremeux is aged in their 22-million-year-old natural sandstone cave. Whether you are snacking or party planning, serve your Kaltbach Le Cremeux with blackberries, pineapple, or honey, and pair it with iced green tea or a bright Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc, or Riesling. Look for the red and blue Emmy logo at your favorite local grocer. Hi, everybody. I want to talk about our sponsor, Bob's Red Mill. As everybody in the Bomb Squad knows, this employee-owned company has been offering organic, gluten-free, and stone-ground products for decades. One Bob's product I always seem to have in my pantry, it's the gluten-free, organic, thick-rolled oats. I use these when making one of my favorite recipes from the Cherry Bomb Cookbook, savory oatmeal with miso and mushrooms from Lexi Smith. If you've never made savory oatmeal, you should give it a try. It's perfect for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Lexi uses oyster mushrooms, scallions, garlic, white miso, tamari, and then stirs in an egg for body. It's creamy and delicious and has a hint of cheesy nuttiness from the miso. Bob's Red Mill is offering 25% off when you shop at bobsredmill.com, so you can pick up some oats or whatever ingredients you're needing these days. Just use the code CHERRYBOMB at checkout. Happy shopping and happy cooking. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and pâtisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best foodie cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turn your daydreams into... Dave, sorry, can I read that one more time?
Yeah.
All right. You need to be quiet, Char. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and pâtisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best foodie cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu and let your culinary adventure begin. Now back to our interview with Natasha Pickowitz, the head pastry chef at Café Altro Paradiso and Flora Bar in New York City. If you've never done the soak before, how do you start?
I would say that the best way to start would be with just milk or some kind of like milk-like substance. It doesn't have to have dairy in it. But like if you are going to flavor milk and make like chocolate milk or strawberry milk or something like that, that's probably going to be really delicious soaked into a cake. So that's always a good way to add richness and body and flavor without adding sweetness. But I'll always take like a little piece of cake and just do a little pre-soak and just dab it with a brush just to see how it'll take. And I'll let it sit for a day and then I'll try it. And then I can usually adjust from there. I mean, sometimes I'll make a very basic, simple syrup, like 2 parts water to 1 part sugar, so it's not too sweet. And then from there, I'll add in other things. So, you know, if the sponge you're using isn't too sweet, then that's also another great way to hydrate your cake layers.
So when you say soak, in some cases, you're literally soaking.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, you don't want it to become, somebody said this fabulous word to me the other day, sodden. You know, where you bite down and so the liquid squirts back out of it. I mean, that's unpleasant too. So, you're always trying to find this balance of, you know, how soaked it should be. But if you use a soak that has a color to it, like coffee, then usually you can see how far down it travels. For me, it's trial and error. If you're making a cake at home, you should have a scale and then you can measure how much you're adding to each layer just to be on the safe side.
Well, it's a fun activity for those of you out there who love baking and who want to kind of take things to the next level.
Yeah.
Awesome. Any flavors or ingredients you're obsessed with right now?
Right now? Well, we just got some beautiful rhubarb in, so I've been kind of processing that towards...
So funny. I just interviewed Cynthia Wong.
Do you know
her from The Butcher and the Bee?
Yeah.
And she is obsessed with rhubarb right now.
Love rhubarb. Love ways to add acidity and freshness to cakes too. So we like play around a lot with citrus and fresh fruit preserves captured in a preserve or maybe a soak or a juice or something like that.
What do you do with rhubarb?
Today I juiced the rhubarb, saved the pulp, and
raw.
Then
so raw juiced
right,
rhubarb.
Right. And then whisked in a little bit of glucose, which has a lower sweetness content than like a granulated sugar. So you get body, but not sweetness. And then that's going to be like a wonderful flavor to sort of incorporate into any kind of cake layer. Because I'm trying to think about...
So that'll be the
spring
soak.
Coming in. I think so.
Back to the soak.
Right. And then we made... One of our chefs at Altro made this really delicious rhubarb jam, kind of like a compote. And that, you know, we're playing around with that. And
when you juice the rhubarb, you were about to say you have the pulp. Do you do anything with the pulp?
Yeah, it's completely edible. Obviously, it's more of like the reserve fibers, but the juicer that we use processes the pulp into kind of this yummy, dry kind of fiber that is edible and pretty, and I don't see why we can't use it. When we were doing a dessert at Flora, I was making a celeriac ice cream, and we were saving this pulp from the celeriac that we were juicing, and we were topping the ice cream with the pulp. So it's a way to like play with temperatures and mouthfeels, but also of keeping that flavor sort of throughout, you know.
You are clearly a next level pastry chef, Natasha.
I mean, honestly, like working with Ignacio, like for me coming on and working with him was an opportunity for me to be like, I want to know everything that you know about food. I want to be in your brain. I want to taste how you taste. I want to look at a fruit or a vegetable and think about its possibilities the way that he does. And, you know, he's so involved with pastry, which I'm really thankful for, that, you know, we've been able to sort of form this relationship where I feel like we, you know, share knowledge with each other. And that's been really rewarding for me.
So let's go back and talk about you as a kid and then a college student and all that, because you did not take the typical path toward pastry chefdom.
No, didn't go to culinary school. I had all those aspirations to be a journalist and to be a writer. So I went to Cornell and studied English Lit, and then became the arts and
entertainment. We have to talk about, so San Diego to Ithaca.
Yeah.
That is dramatic. Well, not just in terms of one side of the country to the other, but I've been to Ithaca and it's cold.
Yeah, it is. Oh, I really wanted to be somewhere that was as different and far away from San Diego as possible. But also I was a big rower, kind of jock nerd type. So Cornell had a terrific rowing program. I went to the campus and was really taken by the scale of the town and how beautiful the area was and being in New York. And so I went out there and studied English, and then became the arts and entertainment editor at this like alt-weekly newspaper called the Ithaca Times at 21. And that was tremendous fun. And at the same time was also doing radio, was also kind of curating music shows of sort of experimental kind of avant-garde music. And food was like not in my world.
It's like, not like you were making cakes on the weekends okay.
No, I mean, I was cooking and making my own food, but I wasn't really as engaged or felt as passionate about it at all. Until I moved to Montreal, and I wanted to write and freelance, and I wanted to go to grad school. I wanted to get my PhD in ethnomusicology. And I applied to a handful of PhD programs and was rejected everywhere. Didn't get in anywhere. It was devastating. But I ended up getting this job just to pay the bills at this place called Dépanneur Le Pickup, which is kind of a luncheonette / bodega in Montreal that needed a baker. And I lied and said I had baked before and I had worked in restaurants before. I had done neither of those things, but I figured I would figure it out. And I really became so engaged with the work of it. I loved being on my feet. I loved making things with my hands. I loved reading new recipes and working with ingredients and learning new techniques.
Okay, but how was that first week having bluffed your way into the gig?
It was obviously super horrifying. I mean, I think every new job I've had working in restaurants, the first 6 or 9 months, I was just petrified, like at different sort of stages of being petrified. But, you know, I was super nervous. But, you know, I really loved the artistry of it and making things and also the camaraderie of the kitchen. And that was a really special place to work, you know, as sort of this like alternative kind of, it was sort of like this punk rock LGBT kind of space that served kind of diner classics. And all the pastries I did were super Betty Crocker style with kind of like a twist. But, you know, I had no chef. I wasn't working under anybody. And I was just kind of figuring it out on my own. And then I got my first real restaurant job at this restaurant in Montreal called Lawrence. And they now have a wine bar also called Larry's. But that was really where I, you know, like kind of learned everything, learned how to make sourdough bread, learned how to make ice creams, learned how to do savory things, learned how to work the hotline, like, you know, everything. And from there, I just became so addicted to it. Like, I loved it. I loved the energy, the adrenaline. I loved how satisfying it felt to make things. I couldn't get enough. And then when I moved to New York, it was to work with a woman who's the pastry chef at the time at Marlon Sons and Diner. So, you know, it's every new place I've been has been very deliberate in terms of working with the right kind of products, being in the right kind of kitchen, and also having like a mentor figure. Like I didn't go to culinary school, so it's really important for me that I have people in my life that I'm constantly learning from and that are challenging me. And, you know, I have that relationship with Ignacio now. And when I moved to New York, it was with Ashley, who was my chef then. And, you know, it's, I just think, you know, there's still so much I don't know. And, you know, having those relationships around me is what makes my practice better completely.
What was your pastry resolution for 2018?
Actually, my pastry resolution for 2018 was sort of twofold. One was I'm not a big chocolate person, so was to do more chocolate work. It's just...
What does chocolate work entail?
You know what I mean? Like tempering chocolate at the perfect temperature. I think that there are certain kind of chemistry aspects to chocolate that require a lot more precision and skill and learning. And I want to feel like I can be comfortable doing those things and that I also can appreciate chocolate, which I definitely don't as much as like other people I know. But then my other resolution was a little bit more like for the team. And, you know, I resolved to the team that I wanted to make sure that I was, you know, giving them enough and that, you know, and that our relationship was as productive and sort of meaningful as possible. And, you know, it's always a challenge to sort of figure out the balance between me doing stuff on my own and me helping facilitate other people do work. And that's delegation, it's teaching. And luckily, like, the restaurants where we work are so teaching forward and sort of education forward. Like, I love bringing in green cooks. I love career changers. Like, I was that person. And sometimes I feel like if you didn't go to culinary school, then maybe you might not have sort of a preconceived idea of what you think pastry should be. And I like people who have that openness to them and are game for anything. And, you know, the more mature person you tend to get, women or men who are a little bit older and have done some other things and are coming into it now and are ready to work, you know, I really appreciate those qualities. So, yeah.
So, Natasha, it's been really fun talking to you.
Likewise, yeah.
Everybody in New York needs to go to the Planned Parenthood bake
yes,
sale.
Yes, please come. It's going to be a blast.
Tell us all the details again.
So it's going to be Sunday, April 8th, 11 to 3, or, you know, whenever we sell out of everything, which last year was like 11:45 a.m. But this year we're a little bit better prepared. We have more people involved, and we're doing more fun things too. So, you know, we are going to not just be having pastries for sale for donations, but we're also putting together like beautiful tote goodie bags stuffed with things from all of our friends. Like Simone is going to do a zine. Dr. Cow they're going to do like some of their vegan raw treats. You know, Counterculture is donating coffee. Regalis Foods, you know, probably something decadent and wonderful. You know, we want to create as many opportunities for people to donate if they would like to. So I want people to feel like they can come and feel generous and have a good time, have pastries, coffee. You know, we have the team from Counterculture is going to be on site making coffees for everybody all day, have a drink, you know, and hopefully the weather will be fabulous. And everyone, like last year, there were kids sitting on the sidewalk with ice cream cones. It was like so moving. It was really special.
Do you know what you're making yet?
I do. Oh my gosh, I almost forgot to mention. So Nacho and I have been toiling over making the perfect donut. So I'm going to be doing the Cafe Altro Bombolini a la crema. So it's just like beautiful yeasted donut filled with vanilla bean creme patissiere. And then I'm going to do one other thing, like a savory treat. So I'll probably do a riff off of the sourdough focaccia I did for Simone at Wifey. We were doing these small pizzettes with vegetables and cheese and delicious. So yeah, I'm so excited to see what everybody else is going to do. It was a real feast for the senses. So,
well, I can't wait. I will be there. I was out of town last year and I'm very excited.
Yes, great.
To be there this year.
Glad.
So I'll be looking for all of you out there in Radio Land. Natasha, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You are the bomb.
Nice.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Dave Tatasciore, our engineer, and to Tra La La for our theme song. And thank you to our sponsors for supporting today's episode. Emmy, the maker of delicious cheeses from Switzerland, Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school, and Bob's Red Mill, who wants you to eat wisely because you're irreplaceable. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Heritage Radio and Cherry Bomb Magazine. Thanks for listening, everybody.
You're the bomb!
I'll have what she's having.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.